Welcome to the Home Health Revealed podcast, brought to you by HealthRev Partners. Join your hosts, Michael Greenlee, and me, Hannah Vale, as we dive into the world of home health, hospice, and palliative care services. Each episode features real stories and insights from industry leaders covering everything from innovative technologies and payer negotiations to quality improvement and clinician safety. Whether you're a seasoned professional or new to the field, our podcast offers valuable knowledge to help you provide the best care for your patients. Tune in and be part of the conversation on Home Health Revealed.
Hannah, we got a great show today on the Home Health Revealed podcast. I'm really excited about what the listeners are going to hear because the topic is cash posting, and it seems like a simple thing, right? You just claim pays, post the daggum thing, move on about your world. But it's really not that easy. In fact,
seems like it, but it's not.
Yeah, you're going to find out it's a little bit harder than what you think. And so we've talked to a lot of agencies. We've seen, a lot of things that, either incorrect posting or write-offs that shouldn't have been write-offs. And there's a lot of other things. So in today's topic, what we're going to cover with Alex today is the importance of cash posting in general, some of the challenges that we see. But mainly we're going to talk about, the timing of when things need to be cash posted. We're going to be talking about, the importance of the month-end close, how that ties into cash posting, the impact of cash posting overall, really seeing a really true financial picture. That way, the more accurate your financial data is, the more you can invest in other areas of the business, right? And so it's very common that we come across a lot of agencies, especially when we do a lot of revenue recovery, that we get into looking at the claims that, maybe haven't paid, but actually they did pay and no one posted it, or it did pay and they posted the wrong line item. There's just a lot of complexities in there. So I'm really excited about it because again, I think the listeners are going to learn a lot more about cash posting. More importantly though, we're going to have a nice little document at the end of the show that they'll be able to click on and kind of, measure themselves up, how they're doing cash posting, how do they need to set up their cash posting processes. So I'm really excited about being able to provide that as well. So with no further delay, let's dive into our podcast on cash posting.
Oh, you know what we should talk about? That game, that rock, paper, scissors game.
Oh yeah.
Did you play that?
But I don't get the diamonds though.
You got to find something that beats diamond. It's different every time.
It does.
Yeah, and it tells you if you have like a unique answer that nobody else in the world has given yet. So we got two answers that beat everybody else in the world this morning. Everybody should play this game. My son is great at this game. How many back and forths did you get?
I mean, when I put in what beats rock, I put paper. I say go. This says next. And this says...
You don't put paper. Paper is so plain Jane.
But that's what beats rock.
Sometimes what else could beat a rock? Okay, I put in dynamite, right? What beats rock? Dynamite.
Dynamite.
Yeah. 1,529 other people also said dynamite. Dynamite beats rock. So next, what beats dynamite? Well, water, because it would make it not go anymore. Oh, yes. Okay. So I got another one. Water beats dynamite. Next. I'm on three. What beats water? Sunshine?
It can
be anything. Right? So you got to keep going. You got to keep going. What beats sunshine? Sunblock.
Clouds.
You have to see how many you can get to beat the AI. All right. So after the dynamite, we had water, and then water was sunshine. Let's see if it takes it. You have to see if it takes it. Sometimes it'll be like, no. 971 others today have guessed that sunshine beats water. What beats sunshine? We said sunblock. Okay. What would beat sunblock?
Shade.
All right. What beats shade? Tree trimmer. Take it? Yes. Only four others have guessed that shade is beat by a tree trimmer. What beats a tree trimmer? Are they electric or gas?
I don't know.
No gas.
What beats fire?
No gas.
Besides water.
Water. No oxygen.
Can you put no oxygen?
Yep. What beats no gas? Electricity. Yep. What beats no electricity?
Oxygen? What beats no oxygen? Death?
No. Photosynthesis.
What?
Put photosynthesis and see if it works.
Yeah.
A butter churn does not beat electricity. I'm out.
What beats photosynthesis?
No soil.
Did I lose? Photosynthesis happens in plants, which needs soil to grow. You can't have one without the other, buddy. I said no soil.
Yep.
Well, I didn't beat it.
Dang.
No, it says no soil does not need photosynthesis, which whatever.
That's fun.
We're going to talk a little bit about cash posting, which is my one of my favorite topics, because I mean, like, that's the whole point of the game, right? Is to get paid. And we have Alex join us from HRP. So, Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Michael. Thanks for having me today.
Well, I'm glad you're here, man. I'm excited about our conversation. And you know, Alex, the thing is there's a lot of challenges with just cash posting. And so we wanted to take some time through all the other podcasts that we've done and really just talk about the importance of cash posting, doing it correctly, some best practices and so forth. But, you know, just to give a little insight, you know, part of the whole mission is to create predictable revenue, right? Because these agencies cannot continue to have, you know, cash flow that goes, you know, real good 1 month, low next month, one good month, one low month, you know, the roller coaster effect, I guess is what I'm saying. And, you know, a lot of times we see a lot of inconsistency with the cash posting, which creates inconsistent financial data. And then, of course, there's some agencies that are just losing the revenue simply because these claims have been written off and they shouldn't have been written off. So those are just a couple of things that I see. So I'm really excited about the opportunity for Hannah and I to talk to you about it and get some best practices and hopefully get some great information to this industry about how they can do better in cash posting.
Absolutely. I'm excited.
Are you up for that?
Absolutely.
All right. Fantastic.
So, Alex, you've been cash posting for almost 5 years. Can you start by explaining to the audience why cash posting is so crucial in home health?
Yeah, absolutely. So cash posting, it's very crucial. Not many agencies understand why it is, but it's pretty much that backbone to the revenue cycle management. And what I mean by that is it directly impacts a company's financial health, which ultimately ensures that most accurate AR that we have, and then also providing a clear picture on that revenue for each client. Without that active cash posting, pretty much agencies, they can't really truly understand what that financial position may be.
Well, let's dive into some best practices, shall we? So the first thing you'd recommend to agencies looking to improve the cash flow would be what?
So one of the main things that is very key, sending bank statements is on a regular basis, preferably weekly. It's very, very crucial. And the reason being for that is because that makes sure that we have that most accurate cash posting being posted, and that ultimately prevents that backlog of paid not posted items. And what I mean by paid not posted, so if we're not receiving a bank log, we're not sure what's exactly being posted into that bank account. So we could have paper checks that we could possibly be missing that maybe an agency forgot to send over. It could be sitting somewhere. And then also if we have any kind of payer portals that we might not be aware of. So that causes some backload on that paid not posted if we don't receive those bank logs, you know, in a timely fashion.
So how quickly do you recommend cash posting?
So typically I would, if you can and you have the ability to be able to do it daily, that's highly recommended. But over here at HRP, what we try to strive for is at least within the 2 days. We want to make sure that we account for that revenue in a timely manner and then in real time and or as close to real time that we can get. So, you know, kind of to touch base on what we just talked about was bank statements weekly are very important because we can catch those payments that might be unknown payments. You know, they could be starting with a new payer and we don't have that payer portal set up. We're also able to clear out that AR within that timely manner, and we can prevent having those pay not posted within the future months and having that AR down as low as we possibly can. And then basically maintain an up-to-date financial picture. You know, when agencies, when they reconcile only monthly, it ultimately then causes issues and problems. And it's going to be a huge problem toward end of the month when you want to actually try to close in a timely manner.
So do agencies that don't outsource, do they follow that same process of gathering bank statements, or is that just something that mainly you do for a vendor or a company such as us?
I typically would think that most agencies utilize that because they have everything in house. So if they're not using a vendor, they have everything in house. They maybe not as best, which is why they ultimately go to a vendor, and maybe they don't know the whole ins and outs on why bank statements can be very crucial in the long run.
But typically, you know, a company or someone doing internal or outsourcing, I mean, they're posting daily. Typically, right? To keep that AR totally clean.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But we're just saying that we're recommending that, you know, daily, of course, but no more than 2 days of a gap. And so if it goes further than that, I mean, can it cause additional problems?
Yeah, ultimately, you know, it's going to cause a lot more problems than, you know, you think, because you can start missing payments that are coming in and, you know, you're not aware that they actually came in. It's pretty crucial, but then it also keeps that nice picture framed of that AR for you and shows the actual accurate AR that you have rather than it constantly keep going week to week and then being behind on that.
Now, you mentioned earlier about month-end close.
Yes.
So what are some of the best practices for month-end close?
So one of the biggest key for month-end close is communication with our clients. We want to make sure that you establish and maintain that consistent schedule for uploading, whether it's paper remits, the bank statements. I always recommend that weekly because if you're not sending stuff over and you're not sending over the bank statements and payments weekly, then come the end of month end, we might not be able to close in that timely fashion that you want to close out your EMR system, which will then start making us behind on that next month that we're starting to work on. So make sure you're staying up throughout the month on top of getting everything posted.
All right. Yeah. So you talked about framing the AR. I like the way you put that. I also like your glasses. So
thank
if you're listening and you're not looking at your glasses, they look great.
What kind of glasses are those?
They are blue light glasses.
Yeah.
Oh, for computer screens.
Oh, yeah.
And I also appreciate her Pennsylvania accent. It is just making my day. Okay, so cash posting, AR. How does timely cash posting really impact that framing up of the AR?
So timing of that posting is, it allows us to clear out that AR a lot faster and not constantly have so much more AR than we think. And then showing that most accurate AR that we have currently, it helps clients so they can actually see that their business is running, you know, pretty smoothly. And it's a very clear demonstration of effective billing and revenue collection that we have. So it's very important to make sure that we have that timely posting in order to make sure that we have, again, that nice picture of what our AR actually looks like.
Yeah. So you mentioned about, you know, claims and claim payments and posting those payments. But what happens if you come across a claim or a remit, it's been paid. However, that payment's mailed, right? So it's not set up EFT and it's mailed. How long do you go? Because again, I always see a gap where, you know, for an example, a claim is paid, it's mailed out to the agency. It can go right in the front drawer. Maybe that person's on vacation. Maybe the check gets lost. You know, not that I don't trust our U.S. postal system, but, you know, money traveling through the mail is not the best way to do it. You know what I mean? I'd rather have that bad boy set up EFT. But in a situation where it's not and it's coming to the agency and several days go by, maybe even weeks go by and you know it's been paid, but you can't post it because you can't match up that deposit. Tell me, how do you go about handling that?
I always recommend to set everything up electronic as much as you can. By setting those payments up electronic, we don't have the issue where we may lose a check, where, like you said, somebody's on vacation, it may not be sent, it might not be uploaded. You have a big stack of papers and you miss one or two of them here and there. So electronic setting up for your payers and your payments is definitely a big recommendation of mine. Typically, what I would do is if, you know, I notice that payments have been paid, I wait at least a week to see if it comes in, because some of our, especially on our payer portals, some of them come through as checks but are on the portal. So I typically wait about a week because it can be a couple days before it actually hits that bank account. If within that week I don't see it come across on that bank statement, I would send out an email to the client. Just, hey, have you guys received this? Can you double check to make sure this might not have been missed? But going back to that electronic setup, that's going to cover about 80 to 85% of your payers. So when we look at that remaining 15%, we set up something called an SOP, which is our standard operating procedure. And basically what that shows is how we are going to handle that next 15% that aren't coming through or aren't able to be set up as electronic payments that are going to come through as that paper remits. And that's where that communication again comes in, where, you know, we would want to have set up a specific day that we let our clients know, hey, does this day work for you? Can you upload the paper remits that you receive? Because then the communication part of that is, we're making sure, again, that we're posting everything timely. So trying to get backtrack to trying to get everything electronically set up, that is probably the key. So we don't miss out on a lot of these paper remits.
Yeah, you know, the thing about checks that are coming through the mail, and a lot of agencies don't know this, but if you are outsourcing your RCM You can have actually where, when you're setting up stuff electronically, actually the EOBs can actually come to a company like HealthRev Partners. That company, in this scenario, be us, right? We'd create a shared file where we can drop those EOBs. But the reason why I like that process a lot better is because it again, we're all about efficiency. And if the agencies are getting the EOB, you can see just through what you explained that there can be a lot of inefficiencies there, right? Gaps, missed payments, all that kind of stuff that can delay, you know, what it is that we're trying to achieve, which is efficiency in getting these claims posted so they have a clean AR. So, yeah, I just want to make that known that if you are outsourcing or, you know, even internally, you can set those EOBs to come up to who you want those EOBs to come to. So you can take a step out of the process by just doing what you're saying is making the stuff electronic, have the EOBs come directly to the vendor or whoever may be handling your revenue cycle management. Another interesting topic, though, under cash posting, and I always like to talk about EMRs, right? Because not all EMRs are created equal, right? Some are better than others. Some are good at some things and not so good at the others. But within an EMR, and you work out of several EMRs, up to 15 to 18 different EMRs, right? So you've become an expert in a lot of those. But does an EMR make a big difference when it comes to cash posting?
Yeah, you know, Mike, that's a great question because the EMR does make a difference. Kind of how you said some are a little easier to work out of than others. I've definitely mastered in working with Homecare Homebase. There's other really good ones out there like CanTime and WellSky. The reason why it's so important is because you want to make sure that you have an EMR that you can set up electronically. You know, I work in a couple EMRs where we can't have electronic payments, so it is 100% manual posting. And ultimately, that's very time consuming. It takes away from other things that you can be doing to make sure that you're running the best business that you can. So the EMR systems are definitely a big part when you're looking to see which one's going to fit best for your agency specifically.
Yeah, especially if you have a clearinghouse. So if you have a clearinghouse, and where we're going with this is, if you have a clearinghouse, there's usually an SFTP file that you can get a code from that you'll send to your EMR company, let's say CanTime for an example, and they'll connect it on the back end where you send claims directly out of CanTime. And of course, when the claims do pay, it'll post in the EMR for you. So that's what you're talking about. There's ways to also streamline. And you are right. There's a lot of agencies that we talk to that don't even have that part of it set up. So therefore, they're manually doing all those claims. The other thing that they're doing happen to do is when they're sending claims is they have to download the claims, then upload them in a system, which is another step. And that's a step that can be missed. People could download the claims, forget to upload the claims for whatever reason, right? but that's exactly what we're talking about right there. It's like, there's another easy, simple step of, and I think you're right on when you say like, man, if you just take a step back, look at all your payers and even complete like a payer assessment, say, okay, you know, where's this claim? How's this claim being billed out? How's this remit coming back? If it's coming back paper or electronic or whatever the case is, where's it going and how's it work? And really create a process around that. And then as you're looking at those processes, then you can start identifying step by step where those little simple gaps are at. Once you fill those gaps, I mean, you're talking, even talking a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes here and there, it adds up over a day, over a week, over a month. I mean, it's pretty significant. So it's definitely worth that if you haven't done a payer assessment in quite some time, that you should do that at least annually and look at those payers, see how they're being set up and see how things are progressing along through the whole from intake all the way to payment.
Yeah. And just to backtrack real quick on that Homecare Homebase and, you know, CanTime, how we were just talking about, you know, you can have a clearinghouse set up specifically for them. You know, for instance, with Homecare Homebase, you download 835s, you physically electronically upload. So that's one way of electronically upload. But then when you come to CanTime, you can actually work with something like a Novaline where you can get them specifically sent to there. And all you have to do is a poster. You have to go in, make sure that everything's posted accurately, make sure your contractual is dusted off. And all you have to do is just hit post. So there's definitely different varieties of electronic posting when it comes to different EMRs as well.
Yeah. Should we just call you a poster? Because you just said poster. I think of poster. I don't know if you know this, but in seventh grade, you always have to build a poster clock. So basically you buy your favorite poster, which mine was Michael Jordan dunking from the free throw line. You remember that iconic picture?
Okay. Yeah.
It was, I don't know how big it was. It was pretty big. And then you just put a frame around it, poke a hole in it, put a little clock in there and boom, you're done. But it was awesome. So when you said poster, I thought of my poster clock.
Correction, cash poster.
Cash
poster. What we're trying to get to, right, are predictable revenue goals. And that's where cash posting really helps build that so that we can predict growth for the future. And so, of course, we use Velocity, right, to track our daily posting amounts and monitor those daily progresses towards our weekly, monthly revenue goals. How else does cash posting really contribute to looking forward? How can agencies prepare for growth with cash posting practices?
Yeah, so another great question, because it is very important if you're looking to grow your business. You want to make sure that you have that most clean and up-to-date AR. It's very crucial if you want to expand. And reason being is because you want to make sure that accurate cash posting provides a clear financial picture for planning for your future. It's very important to establish to make sure that you have a solid process before you even go to take on, you know, more facilities, more agencies, whatever it may be, and scaling your operations out and making sure that you have those solid processes in place. I've definitely seen where I've come across some clients run into some significant issues where they didn't have all their processes down prior to taking on more facilities. And it started getting a little out of hand that we had to kind of bring it back down to figure out and restart from the beginning. So it definitely is very important to make sure that you have that most clean and up-to-date AR before you want to continue with that future and adding on more facilities to your agency.
What's one common mistake that you see in cash posting, and how can agencies avoid it?
One of the biggest common mistakes is underestimating the complexity of cash posting. Again, like I said in the beginning, you know, a lot of agencies don't understand that cash posting is not only just posting payments and receiving all the cash. There's more in depth to that. And, you know, they don't realize with the agencies that dedicated cash posters can identify so many issues, whether that may be an EMR setup and causing problems, whether that may be incorrect sequestration setup in the EMR or incorrect and inaccurate rate setup in that EMR. With cash posting is we are kind of that back end of everything that if there's a payer setup incorrectly, we see that. So we can bring that to the table with our agencies, with our clients, and, you know, let them see that, hey, you know, something set up, because ultimately that's going to make more work on that cash poster or on the agency themselves, depending on whether we do as a vendor, you know, contractual adjustments or agency does that contractual. Ultimately, it's going to be put more work on others if they don't see all the issues that they have set up in that EMR. So that's why cash posting is more than just posting those payments that come in from the payers.
Well, okay, let's talk about this then. So, you know, this is common that, you know, you mentioned the EMR and the payer setup, yeah, and maybe even the reimbursement that they're supposed to get on a per payer level. So let's say that, you know, there's an agency out there. They're going to bill $150 out, knowing that contractually their contract's only for $125, but yet they set the rates up in their system at $150. Why do agencies do that?
So they anticipate to receive that, you know, $150, even though, like you said, knowing that they're only going to receive that $125. So ultimately, it comes to that payer setup with the EMR. It puts so much more time on that we now have to go in and do that manual adjustment. Ultimately, we're going to go in and we're going to adjust the remaining balance off. So I think if the rates are set up a little bit different, that's not going to cause as much overtime of payments that need to now be manually adjusted. A lot of time when I say with the payer setup, if you have those rates incorrect and if they're not set up properly for a claim to go in electronically, that now means that we have to manually go back just to make sure the rates are set up. And if they're not, when we go to electronically upload a payment, now we have a balance. And if we're not going back and checking those electronic payments, then we're going to have a lot of AR on our EMR system that's not actually AR and stuff that should just be adjusted off. It's going to be very time consuming if those rates are not set up properly in that EMR system.
Yeah, probably also depends on how many claims they have. It's a lot of time that, you know, could be eliminated if you just put in the correct rate.
Right, absolutely. And then it also comes back to, too, you know, how we just talked about, it's very important to set up everything electronically.
That's actually really great advice. Any other tips, Alex? And I know we're putting together a quick tip sheet that will be downloadable. I'll be sure to include the link. But any other tips for our listeners on cash posting practices?
Yeah, I definitely say that consistency is key. You want to make sure that you have and establish a regular schedule for cash posting and stick to it, and continuously review and refine your processes. If you don't stick to that schedule, ultimately it's going to put so much more pressure again toward that end of the month. But you want to make sure that you have a nice solidified process when it comes to cash posting. You also don't want to underestimate the value and clear communication about payments, schedules, and expectations.
Yeah, you know, that's incredible insight. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today. It's battle time. This is my favorite part of the podcast, the Battle Corner, where opinions matter, but there's only one winner.
So let's set the stage. Before this episode, each of our participants was assigned a topic to debate. Michael, as always, will be arguing against the topic, while our guest will be arguing for it. And the beauty of this is that I get the privilege of declaring the winner.
Today's battle is sponsored by Velocity. Well, hey, the way I look at this is someone's going to rise to the top and someone's going to crumble. And I think, you know, I'm not going to crumble. All right, folks. So grab your popcorn and buckle up, because it's not just a game. It's an epic showdown of all kinds of massive proportions. And let me tell you, all I do is win, people. All I do is win.
Alex, you get to be our first guinea pig for our debate. Alex, you're for, and Michael, you are against.
Okay.
This is the question. Are you
Bring
ready?
Bring it on. Bring
Very
it on.
Very serious today.
Bring it on.
Is it time to eliminate a very important piece of currency, a piece of our history, the penny, the smallest currency? Should it be eliminated from our transactions?
All right. So I'm definitely for eliminating the penny. Number one reason that I feel that I am agree that the penny should be eliminated is because it definitely costs twice as more to make the penny. The world too, like what world we live in nowadays, it's becoming a whole digital world. Not many people carry money. They're always carrying their cards. With the money and finance, it's all becoming digital. So carrying around that coin is really just inconvenient, honestly. And it's very bulky. Nobody wants that coin sitting in your pocket. And it's basically a dying practice. A lot of people argue that getting rid of the penny may be a force for rounding up prices, but I don't think that would be the case. They could ultimately round up, or they could ultimately round down. And then I also think that the penny, that's like one of the most collected coin right now. That's found to be like within your homes and piggy banks, because people don't carry them around and they're constantly just laying around. That's now causing for them to have to make more, which is then ultimately putting more money into making more pennies, because nobody carries them around anymore.
What you're saying, they're having to make more pennies because people are like,
yes,
hoarding them, not using them.
Correct. They just they go in your piggy bank and then you cash them in for cash.
Do you take the time to pick up a penny if you see it?
Absolutely.
I'm talking to Alex.
If it's heads up, yeah.
If it's heads up. Okay, if it's heads up.
Is that your reasoning for the penny?
Yeah.
To get rid of it. Let me tell you why we should keep the penny. All right.
All right.
First of all, it will keep prices down. There's no business out there in the United States, or around the world for that matter, if they use the penny, that would round down. So statistics tell us that the alternative to a penny is rounding to the nickel, which, by the way, you said the penny is expensive to make. The nickel is twice what it is to make a penny. So if you get rid of pennies, now you have to make more nickels, which costs us a lot more money. So they're already, I'm debunking your little statement on the cost of the penny. The other thing is, you already look at inflation, even though the rate did come down a little bit. What you're doing is you're today already families are going to the grocery store and spending more money. You talk about now every time they go to the grocery store, which is usually typically once a week, and all their groceries constantly being rounded up. That's a significant increase in the rate. Now, the other thing about credit cards or non-cash is that's true for some, but for low income families and minorities, that's actually false. They use a lot more cash than they use credit cards. So that would take, it'd be a tremendous impact for really lower income type households. The other reason is that based off an economics professor at Pennsylvania State University, says that extra rounding charges would exceed $600 million annually and would be regressive, affecting the poor and other disadvantaged people disproportionately. And one study found that rounding the penny, this is in Canada, but let's say we did in the United States, just the cost of grocery stores is an estimated $3.27 million Canadian dollars, which increases to the American dollar, $2.5 million. So that's significant. Now, on top of that, you mentioned the price of the penny. Again, the coin would cost a lot more. In fact, without pennies, the mint would be forced to make more 5-cent pieces that would cost an estimated $10.9 million more annually. And I don't know if you've seen our debt calculator. that runs all the time. That thing, it, just since we've been on the call, we probably just added another $15 billion in debt. So think about what that's going to do. Now, without pennies, right? You know, again, we'd have to create more nickels. But the penny, the nickels, we're making nickels right now at a loss of $2.58 per coin compared to 65 cents for the penny. Now, my last statement that I'll make that should just round this up and maybe be victorious is a lot of nonprofit organizations use pennies to raise money. In fact, Leukemia, Salvation Army, Ronald McDonald House asked people to donate pennies to raise funds. In fact, in 2009, this is a few years ago, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society announced that Children's School had collected 15 billion pennies in support for its charitable work. That's $150 million for the blood cancer research and treatment. Not only that, but there is a group in the, it's called the Good Sense of Oakland, says pennies are easy to ask for and they're easy to give. And then they raised a lot of money through that. And then there's another organization called Common Sense, a nonprofit based in Dallas, Texas, has ran a program called Pennies from the Heart. They've been doing that for 20 years and they've raised over $850,000 for local charities. So with all that in mind and the fact that you get rid of the penny, I don't care if it's face up or face down, you just lost your luck. That's where the good luck comes from. So therefore I'm against getting rid of the penny, keep the penny, and let's start raising money for more charitable organizations.
I was never a debater for one, but just to backtrack what you said about Canada. So Canada actually did get rid of their smallest coin and they found that they actually, some of the things went up and then some of the things went down. So you would never know if they're actually, the prices are going to go up until it actually happens.
Now, I don't know where you got that study from. That could be fake news. That's all I know. But my study, I have all the references.
References.
Yeah.
So I love that neither one of you talked about the historical aspects of the penny or the story of Abraham Lincoln being on the penny, the significance of that.
Abraham Lincoln's on a $5 bill, so he ain't going to hurt his feelings if you were to get rid of it. He's already on the $5 bill. He's fine.
He's already dead. His feelings are gone. Alex, refute him.
Yeah, I can't. That
don't
was a really
let,
good argument.
Don't let him get you, Alex.
That was a really good argument. I'm not a debater.
No, don't
by
tell
any
him that,
means.
Alex. No.
I think it was great. I personally
I'm
think
the
it was great
too. Guinea pig.
I was great. I was fantastic. I won. There's no way
after,
I didn't
like,
win.
After your third point, I'm like, all right, yeah. Where do I go with this?
Now, I would love to hear what our listeners have to say about whether or not we should get rid of the penny. As always, though, at the end of this debate, Michael, you lose. Alex, you are today's winner because our guests are always today's winners.
All right, Michael.
Now for some of the latest CMS news releases. So today we're going to be giving you some important updates from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, that will be of interest to healthcare providers in the post-acute care setting. So be sure to check out the CMS website for additional details. CMS training updates. First up, CMS has released an updated web-based training course titled From Data Elements to Quality Measures. This course offers a comprehensive overview of how data elements are used to construct quality measures across various post-acute care settings. Healthcare professionals can access this valuable resource through the Home Health Quality Reporting training page.
And then there's your Section GG training series. In other news, CMS has also updated a section of the GG web-based training series. This series of courses provides detailed guidance on the assessment and the coding of Section GG, which is crucial for accurate reporting in post-acute care settings. The update series will include 5 courses. Those are Section GG data accuracy and quality measures, prior functioning and prior device use items, accurate coding for GG0130 and GG0170 items, understanding admissions and discharge performance for the GG0130 self-care items. And the fifth and final is understanding admission and discharge performance for GG0170, the mobility items.
These courses are designed to promote accurate coding of post-acute care cross-setting data elements and include interactive exercises to test understanding. To access the training, healthcare providers can access these updated training resources through the SNF QRP training page or the home health quality reporting training page, depending on their specific setting. These training updates are particularly significant as they help ensure that healthcare providers are up to date with the latest guidance on coding and reporting. Accurate coding is essential for quality reporting and can ultimately impact patient care and reimbursement. That's all for our CMS update today. Remember to check the CMS website regularly for more updates and resources to support your work in post-acute care settings.
That's unbelievable.
And Alex, this has actually been an incredible podcast. That wraps up our episode of Home Health Revealed. Don't forget to subscribe for regular updates. You can subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or follow us on YouTube so you can see Alex's glasses. And join us next time for more insights into the world of home health, hospice, and palliative care.
Good job, Alex.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.